Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. This is Dr. Toni, and today is part two of my conversation with Janelle Watson on trauma, how trauma that we experience as adults or in childhood can impact how we parent. And so I do, if you haven't listened to part one, I really highly recommend that you go back, listen to part one. We really introduced the idea of big T and little T trauma and how that can create different stress responses and how our window of tolerance can be impacted by different aspects of parenting, sleep deprivation, hormone fluctuations, pandemic, all of those things that we experience. And I want to introduce you to Janelle before we get started into the conversation. Janelle Watson is a registered social worker who holds a master's of social work with a clinical designation. She's been working in the field of mental health for over 8 years. And during her pregnancy, she really developed a passion for understanding the impacts of pregnancy and postpartum on families and parents. And especially with her daughter being born in 2020, she really developed a special level of empathy for life with a new baby during a global pandemic. Prior to the birth of her daughter, she specialized in sexual trauma therapy, and she has built on this experience by completing her perinatal mental health certification. Janelle's approach to therapy really comes from an anti-oppressive, person-centered lens, and she is experienced in supporting individuals and families through areas including depression, anxiety, big T and little T trauma, PTSD, addictions, grief and loss, sexuality, gender identity, self-image and self-worth. She uses different techniques, including mindfulness-based therapy, sensor-motor-based psychotherapy, art-based therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, and feminist therapy. So without further ado, here is the rest of our conversation. I'd love to kind of delve into ACEs, adverse childhood experiences, and even look at how that impacts who we are as parents and how we can be triggered when it comes to parenting our kids.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's kind of huge.
It's huge. It's so huge. Those adverse childhood experiences, right? Whether you're actually doing the assessment for them or just gathering information, those things are going to impact, right? Because if you think about, like, when I talk about little T trauma, would kind of be like those adverse childhood experiences piling up. Mm-hmm. So it's going to narrow your window. So the more narrow your window is, the more likely you are to experience a trauma, not because more likely things are going to happen to you, but because your window is already so narrow that your ability to tolerate distress is going to be more narrow, and you're more likely to go into a survival response faster.
So your window of tolerance would be more kind of compressed if you didn't have those adverse childhood experiences. You're more likely to get into that fight or flight or freeze or
collapse.
Okay. Yeah. And then, I mean, the whole experience of parenting. I mean, we already talked about kind of the sleep deprivation, the hormone fluctuations, those kind of things will happen after we have our kids. Changes in our relationship, changes in how we're able to connect with our partner and and that intimacy,
the loss of identity, the changing your role in the world, especially for mothers. The heightened expectations and everything. Yeah.
And then again, throw in a pandemic.
Yeah. Maybe your birth was traumatic.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
If we didn't, for sure, for sure. If there's, that's a whole other piece too, is birth trauma as well.
Pregnancy loss, all of the stuff. We could go on for days.
I know. Well, I was going to say too, like throw other life things in, job changes, other family changes, loss of a loved one, friends, aging parent, like all of these kind of things can, again, compress, like we talked about, compress that window of tolerance.
Yeah.
So that we're more likely to get into that fight or flight or freeze response, collapse or attachment cry. Okay. And like you were even saying before, it can be really subtle, small things. Like, sure, it could be a big thing, like our kids crying or screaming or saying certain things or behaving in a certain way or having a tantrum. Or could be something really subtle that could have that possible trigger to get into that response and have that. What would the term, I don't know, would it trigger a trauma response or kind of trigger a possible flashback or just even trigger that stress response kicking in?
Yeah. All of that's going to kind of be trauma responses, right?
So, yeah.
Like you never know what's going to be triggered. And so there could be things because your window is more narrow, right? That say sound is a big one, right? So just having a certain pitches of sound is going to be really dysregulating when your window is really narrow.
Oh, and I've definitely had a number of patients say like, I can handle anything except when I hear a cry or a scream. Yeah. And sometimes it's even not even just in general, it's one child, one particular the way that they cry or scream. Exactly.
Yeah, or it might just be level of sound, right? I mean, I think about when I was a teenager and in my, you know, my 20s and I would go to punk shows and listen to metal and like, you know, mostly punk shows. Very loud, right?
Yeah.
And I'd be very in loud there music. And there's like people in my space and it was, you know, I loved it. I want nothing to do with that now. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even know if I want to go to a concert, let alone a loud one.
Yeah.
I want to go sit in a room quietly where people play gentle acoustics in the background.
And have no one in your space.
Yeah. I want about a 5-foot radius, you know?
Yeah.
Like it changes things. And so we don't know sometimes what those triggers are going to be before we're there. And so this is where that preventative piece can be really helpful. If you already suspect or you already think there might be stuff that is going to come up, I mean, what's the harm in starting early?
Right.
I don't know. Then you get comfortable. And then when you're in the depths of it, and I think I've seen that with my clients where they start coming because they're like, I'm worried that I'm going to struggle. And I'm like, I think this is really smart. Let's come up with a plan. Let's come up with something so that when you're in the depths of it, you already have a relationship with me and you already feel safe. Or other people, right? Like, let's build your network now while you're pregnant.
Yeah.
If we can.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Then when you're in it, it's a lot easier. You're not trying to ask yourself when your window is so narrow that, you know, trying to shower is impossible. Eating is almost impossible, right? Like, you're going to be a mess. And if you already have a relationship and you already have some safety, you're going to be a lot more likely to set up that telehealth appointment, show up with your hair in a bun, with your baby crying, and just be there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I mean, it's an old saying, but it's so true. The more you can really be conscious and mindful looking ahead, that would be amazing. And then hindsight is 20/20 when we're looking back and especially
100 things differently.
Right.
From last week.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you there. And then when, again, parents are in it and in the depths and seeing themselves react in ways that they know that they don't want to, and that they not only regret but feel shame around, because that isn't a good parent. That's not a good mother.
Oh, mom rage.
But then, and there's also that could be a whole other level of
shutdown,
not wanting to be like your parents.
And think about too, right? Like, what a lot of times our support comes from our parents, if they live in, if we are lucky enough to have them living in the same city as us, that they oftentimes end up being our kind of supports. They're the ones that are showing up and helping with things. But what was your experience with them? How triggering is it to have them around in that capacity again? How do we learn to be a parent? Well, we build a template in our brain while we're being parented, right? Mm-hmm. We don't actually take a course, and maybe you did, but now your course is conflicting with your instincts. And when you are at that level of sleep deprivation, you are running on instincts, right? And so we're going to have moments where we go back into those procedurally learned patterns, that default, right? Where it's like, you just respond. Mm-hmm. And then after, you're like, oh no, that was not okay.
Before we started recording, I was desperately trying to find this quote because I thought it summed it up so beautifully. And again, I'll paraphrase and it won't be so eloquent, but it really is this idea that, like, the idea of really like free will and choice, and having a conscious choice is really almost a bit of a fallacy, because we are run by our instincts, and our instincts are really driven by our past experiences. So especially if those past experiences were traumatic, then that's what we're living from. That's what's operating us.
And I find that that message that we have conscious choice for everything really often just creates more stuckness. It creates that really rigid view that you have conscious choice, so don't do these things. Just don't do these things. And then we get really judgy. And then the more judgy we are of other people, we then internalize that judgment, because if you're going to hold other people to that standard, you have to hold yourself to that standard. But now you can't talk about it because it's just your choice. Right. And then you get yourself stuck.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, it is this piece of like, what can you do with that when we are, you know, again, not, again, being run by our instincts. Mm-hmm. Not only do we feel shame around that, but we're experiencing judgment from other people. Because that's not what a good mother does. That's not what a good parent does. That is a really, really crappy place to be in.
Yeah. The internet sucks.
Yeah.
For mothers.
Yeah. Well, and this, and it goes to the whole idea of like social media, and especially when it comes to women and girls and increasing anxiety, because there, we do look to others for this idea of who we should be, how we should be behaving, you know, what's the best way, what's the best thing to do as a mom, or or, you know, as a woman, or
right.
Yeah.
And for women, like, we so often end up in this sandwich of like, if you were assertive and directive and stand up for things, people are going to think you're a bitch. Can't be a bitch, whatever. But society's going to judge you for it. People are going to be critical about it.
Yeah.
If you don't, and you try to keep the peace and try to kind of like, you know, be kind and gentle, and I say kind in quotations here, and loose with all that kind of stuff, then people think you're passive and you're a doormat.
Right.
Right. So again, we end up in this position that we are damned if we do, we're damned if we don't. So we're going to be criticized no matter what we do. Everyone has a view on what is and isn't okay, especially in parenthood, right? The best advice I ever got was from my midwife, who said, don't Google anything, just email me.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. It saved me so many headaches because I just stopped.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I had someone to go to that I trusted. I used that instead, and it saved me from a lot of vortexes.
So a real key, I guess, I guess, preventing, but even when you're in the midst of this, you know, again, possible mom rage coming up, mm-hmm. or even just even in this potential collapse of like just things being so overwhelming.
Or just the mom guilt of not feeling connected.
Yeah.
Not feeling attached, not feeling that immediate, like, I just had a baby. Oh, wow. I'm in love. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen for everybody.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that doesn't happen for.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I love my daughter to pieces. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel that draw until she was closer to a year.
Yeah.
Right? Not because I didn't have a need to take care of her. I fed her. I clothed her. I took care of her basic needs.
Yeah.
But for me, it took longer to hit that point where I was just like in awe.
Right.
With this.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Right? Because are you still trying to attune?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, do you feel magic inside of you?
Yeah.
But what are you doing? Because that you can control. You can't control the magic, but you can control. That's where I wanted to go.
Perfect.
You may have to redirect me sometimes. But what can we control? Because I don't want to have people think that this is like, we don't have control over anything. Because we do. And we can make a conscious choice to look and see, okay, I'm going to notice the things that dysregulate me. I'm going to notice the areas where I'm struggling. And I'm going to be curious about how I can heal some of these things. What do I need to do better than my parents did? And it doesn't mean our parents did a bad job. Sometimes they did, but other times they didn't. They were doing the best they could with the information they had at the time. But the biggest thing, the most important thing in relationship is rupture and repair.
Okay. Tell me more about rupture and repair.
So rupture and repair is not, I screwed up, I'm sorry. Rupture and repair is, I screwed up. That wasn't okay. This is what was happening for me. I'm going to actively work to do better. And then doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then actively working to do better. Right? So it is that piece. And I think that is a lot of what was missing, say, in our upbringing, is it was more of a, this is just what it is.
Yep.
Except
suck it up and deal with it.
And I'm like, well, I don't feel like sucking it up and having to sit through dinner with an abusive person. I just don't, you know, and I don't think people should have to. We so often have put that pressure historically onto the people that are experiencing the abuse, that they're the ones who are expected to sit up and tolerate it. Why are we not putting that back on the person who's being abused? Right. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we get to shift it a little bit. Let's shift how we parent. Let's give ourselves permission to acknowledge that we're going to make mistakes. We are going to make mistakes. We want to make mistakes. We need to make mistakes. We don't want to be perfect parents. A, it's impossible. B, it's actually not healthy, because our children need to see us screw up and then to repair that, to know that it's okay to make mistakes, to know that they don't have to go into a full collapse, shut down, overwhelm, the world is ending because they made a mistake.
Oh my God, that is so key.
Right?
Absolutely.
Rupture and repair.
Rupture and repair.
We're going to screw
That's
it
perfect.
Up.
That's perfect. Yeah. And then it's just a matter of actually showing our kids how you do the repair.
Yeah.
And that it's okay to have that rupture.
Yeah.
It's okay that it didn't go perfectly. And yeah, things didn't go as expected. And it's almost...
And talk about modeling a healthy community conversation about, like, they're going to need that when they grow up.
Absolutely.
There's no such thing as magically meeting the soulmate who you get along with perfectly and, like, you don't argue about anything.
Well, and I was even going to say, you know, setting up the expectation that this will happen.
Yeah.
That it is unrealistic to expect everything to go smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to deal with that.
I joked for years before having my daughter that if I ever had kids, I would start a therapy jar. And every time I screwed up, I'd put $20 in it. And then when they were older, if they needed it, they could use it. If they didn't need it, maybe we could go on a really cool trip.
Absolutely.
I have not done that, but I probably should.
I'm definitely thinking of the same, right?
I'm a little scared of my spicy daughter demanding that I put money in the jar.
But that's okay, because, you know, again, this is where, you know, shifting this conversation in our communities, even like globally, in terms of looking at giving our kids the resources to be able to handle these things.
Yes.
And also that getting a support from a mental health professional is
a
great thing.
First, make sure you like them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just any therapist is not always the right therapist.
For sure.
Do a consult.
For sure.
Any good therapist will have consult options.
And that's always something to really be mindful of. And again, also not only to be able to connect with the person, but also their approach as well. Mm-hmm. And really finding someone that not only that you kind of jive with, mm-hmm. but who also brings tools to the table that really help to shift things and that you actually find a response from.
Yeah. Like one of my favorite questions to ask in a consult is, have you done any therapy before?
Mm-hmm.
If you have, what did you like and what did you not like?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Right. What worked? What didn't work?
Yeah.
Right. Like the things that worked, great. I'll hold on to that information. The things that didn't work, I'm curious about it.
Yeah.
Or I'm maybe like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Because
I think that too.
Because I think a lot of people who think about going to see a counselor, that it's just all about talking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Can you share a few of the things that you do mm-hmm. that aren't necessarily just about talking?
Yeah. I guess this is where some of my colleagues like to joke about my superpowers and being neurodivergent is like, one thing I'm really good at is like mapping in my brain for people what's happening. And being really creative about like, okay, what could we do differently here? So I am quite eclectic. My foundation really though is what's called sensory motor psychotherapy. So I'm trained in level one, which is the trauma level. And then I integrate a lot of interfamily systems therapy, which really looks at different parts of self and how they show up and holding space for them and how they helped you survive. And then outside of that, I also like to integrate some art therapy. I like to do a lot of narrative therapy. I like to different forms of somatics, which fall into the sensory motor stuff. I do a little bit of DBT if I need to, if we're doing some safety and stabilization, which is usually essential because we have to always do safety and stabilization first. And then we can start looking at processing and healing and integration. And we can move from safety and stabilization into processing, and then we can move back to safety and stabilization. It is always our base. It's always what we're coming back to, because at the end of the day, if you are not okay, we have to be very sensitive and very careful about what we open up, right? What do you notice after? Okay, so you were dysregulated for a few days after a session. I want that information, because then we're going to do containment. We're going to slow it down. It's good information to me.
Mm-hmm.
I really approach my work from a stance of there are no resistant clients. There are no bad clients.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that are struggling, and resistance is information. So I love resistance. I want to know why it's happening, right? I don't see it as like, well, why are you here then? You clearly aren't ready, because you booked the appointment. You showed up in my chair or on my computer screen. I want to know what's happening for you right now. Right? This resistance is beautiful information. And what a beautiful way to keep you safe. Don't trust me yet. I get to earn that. You don't have to trust me right away. Right? That is part of building safety. And there is healing in building safety in a safe way. Does that make sense?
Completely. And, you know, when you describe that as well, in terms of that resistance, and someone not being ready to go there, I do think about, you know, not only is there, you know, ourselves to kind of think about, you know, and moms out there who, again, could really use some support in or kind of increasing this window of tolerance. And we can kind of talk about that as well in terms of, okay, how do they manage their regulation? How do they reduce the impact of some of these triggers? And especially if they're coming from having trauma in their childhood or trauma as an adult before becoming a parent, or even if we're seeing resistance in our kids or other loved ones, but to that idea that resistance is not a bad thing. It's not a negative, and that you just have to, you know, ignore that resistance or, you know, open up and just be ready when you're not really ready, I think is something really key to keep in mind when it comes to supporting our kids and other loved ones when it comes to dealing with the traumas they have.
Absolutely. Right.
Yeah.
Again, so quickly we're like, oh, they went through something, put them in therapy.
Yeah.
But to be honest, any of my clients that had that happen struggle more in therapy.
Interesting.
Because therapy is not safe. Therapy was not a choice. Therapy was, you know, demanded of them and reported back to their parents. Right. It wasn't a safe place. And so like it's so important to give them choices. You know, I remember, I've heard this quote many, many times. I have no idea where it comes from, so I apologize. But the whole, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to sit with that, especially when it's someone you love. I struggle with it. I get frustrated, right? I have times where I just want to bang my head against a wall because I'm like, do something.
Yeah.
But I can't make anyone, and none of us can.
Yeah.
We can plant seeds. And I think that's the goal. The goal is to plant seeds, not perfection.
Yeah.
We just plant seeds, create safety and hope that when they're ready, they will do whatever work they need to do.
Yeah. And it really does come down to, you know, each of our responsibility. And again, kind of responsibility being that ability to respond. So you get to respond the way that you are able to.
Yeah.
And know that someone else's response is their responsibility, and they get to, you know, hold those reins however they are able to.
Yeah. And maybe they go into a going on with normal life part of self.
Yeah.
And they just find things that they may be not consciously aware of that help them get through. They dive into work, they dive into fitness, they dive into a hobby, whatever it might be. They find a way to just go on with normal life for a while. It doesn't mean they're feeling great. It doesn't mean everything is wonderful, but they're just going.
Yeah.
And then things happen. And all of a sudden we're back into this traumatized life.
Yeah.
Where we're noticing our trauma symptoms. We can't ignore them. Right. I think one of the common things I see come up for women is they survived pre-baby with exercise, going to the gym, not just exercise, but going to the gym, the interaction with others, the break from people. Right. Like however they like to work out, work, right. Some things that were independent. So having a social life. Well, now those coping mechanisms that just helped you get through, and whether it was healthy or it wasn't healthy, right. For you, it worked in that time, but now it's gone and we haven't replaced it with other coping mechanisms. So that was keeping the symptoms at bay and they're not at bay anymore.
Right. Especially because, okay, if you know, you're busy as a mom, you're not going to the gym, you're not going into work, or again, pandemic really again, put a wrench in all of that on top of it. And then if you are connecting more with social media or even with like, you know, mainstream media on the news, there are going to be a number of different things shared or situations, different lawsuits, different things that can be, again, a real trigger for a number of different experiences that you may have had.
Yeah.
And can also really either, I don't know if that would be compressing that window of tolerance too.
Oh yeah.
And then having more likely to be in that response.
Yeah. Well, because you're taking on the vicarious trauma piece.
Yeah.
Right. We're now taking on everything that everyone else is experiencing, and not at the same degree, not at the same level, but different and the same. It's the importance of containment and boundaries. We see too much.
Yeah.
We hear too much. And I think you see that in the way that people are responding to things. They don't have the energy to even fight for stuff right now. Because it's like, here's this horrendous thing that is happening. I mean, like, look at what's going on for women's rights in the States right now. It is horrendous. Like, we are moving back so far. But people, we don't even have the energy right now.
Yeah.
Like my partner said something really interesting yesterday. He's like, oh yeah, I don't even know what's going on in Ukraine anymore. And I was like, yeah, because there's so much happening. But even these huge, 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 huge events are like just another blip in our brains right now.
Yeah. Because, and really, are our brains designed to have all these different experiences and have to manage and kind of contain all of this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I know for me, being coming from a more anti-oppressive lens, you know, I hear about everything going on in Ukraine, and then my brain also immediately goes to like, what about all the other countries where all these like injustices are happening and these human rights violations? And like, so then I go down giant vortexes and I'm like, oh, well.
Do you really want to think about all of the other places that are having all of these injustices? And it can be a lot. Right. And so I don't, again, another like question that's simple to ask, but again, huge and loaded, is because life is going to happen and negative experiences can happen. And not only for the future, but then we're also carrying around, we can be carrying around our past. Seeing a mental health professional can help to shift that. Are there other ways to really shift the perspective from having and carrying around and being run by post-traumatic stress? Are there ways instead to shift that into more post-traumatic growth? Is that?
So this is where it's tricky. We want to be really careful, even with talking about post-traumatic growth and what that means, because so often it's kind of used as almost like a, well, what did you gain from this?
Yeah. Like that toxic positivity or just silver lining focus.
Yeah. And each individual gets to decide, and they will know when and if something turns into a growth. And more of what it is it's not that the trauma created the growth. It's the work you did as a result of what happened that created the growth. So you are responsible for that. That is yours to hold. And you may have got there even without a trauma, because that was in you already.
That's important. That's a really key piece, that we really get to own that.
Yeah.
And we get to.
You got there despite what happened to you.
Yeah.
Not because of it.
Yeah. Are there things that you would typically suggest your clients do outside of sessions, or even if someone is thinking about counseling, but is looking for a step to do like today?
I think the thing is, be curious, right? Just be curious about it. See how critical you are of yourself. See how hard you are on yourself. What do you notice? Right? How are you treating yourself? What are the experiences that are coming up? Right? Just be really curious about it and don't be judgmental.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not bad. It just is what it is. Right. We got to start there. We got to gather information, and all of it's important. And you don't have to know how to map it. You don't have to know how to figure out what it means. I also encourage people to stop analyzing, right? Get off all of the, like, I know I'm on a podcast right now, but like, get off the 300 mental health podcasts and like Instagram pages, and, you know, pick a couple that make you feel good, but get rid of the ones that don't. Right. Slow down and be curious. Am I taking care of my basic needs? Right. What do you notice when you don't do it? When you're hungry and you still don't get up and go make food, what's happening? I want that information. I want to know. I'm so curious.
Yeah.
Right. Is there resistance? Okay. I wonder what that internalized belief is. There's so much. Like, I just want to like dive down and get into all the nitty gritty of like, that to me is fascinating. First, we need to feed you. So like, let's get some snacks out so you can munch and like make sure you're still getting nutrients. But like, curiosity is so, so important.
And I think from that non-judgmental, lens and focus is so key, because so often our greatest critic is ourselves. Yes. And we can beat ourselves up all day long.
Mm-hmm. And so many times I have clients say, like, I noticed this, and I think it's because of this, 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 and this. And I'm like, that's great. So what did you notice in your body? Maybe that's what your brain says. Possibly.
And let's bring it back to,
does it feel safe to be in your body? If it's not safe in your body, that's great information too.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want to force someone into their body if it's not safe. So I don't know what's going on in there.
Yeah.
Right. We don't know why it's numbed out. But that there is information, and that leads us to that window of tolerance. And how do we start expanding that window? Mm-hmm. Because that it creates a lot of fear when we just look at, like, oh God, so my window is narrow, so I'm just going to react to everything. No, not necessarily. Because before you reach the lines, before you reach hyperarousal, before you reach hypoarousal, your prefrontal cortex is online. You have a functioning brain. Well, it's a functioning brain outside of that, but you have a functioning thinking brain inside. And if we can start to be curious in there, that curiosity can let us start to notice, what are the things that happen before we go out? If we can notice the early signs before we jump out of our window, those are our opportunities. That's where we do the work. Mm. That's how we expand your window.
Interesting. So now, recognizing and being aware of what's going to turn that switch. Mm-hmm. Do you ever say, avoid those triggers, or no, we're going to work with what those triggers are and then be able to
expand
that window in order to make sure that you're not having that same hyper or hypo arousal response.
And I think it depends.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We cannot avoid all triggers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If it is a childhood home where there's significant abuse, don't go back and sit on the front porch.
Yeah.
Not until you're ready. Not until you feel like this is what you want to do and it is your choice and you feel like you have the skills to regulate and ground and contain. If you choose to do that, you may never need to.
And important to recognize that you can have that boundary to not do that.
Yes.
And say no.
Yes. And please do.
Yeah.
If you don't set that boundary, you're just going to re-traumatize yourself.
Yeah.
You've already lived it. You don't need to live it again. Right. You already survived it once. You shouldn't have to keep surviving it in your brain. And then, where we're like going with that. Can you get me back on track? All right. Brain's back online. So when we look at some of the other triggers, right? Like if there's a scent that's a trigger or a certain season, we can't avoid that, right? If spring is a trigger for you, spring is going to happen every single year. So we can't avoid it. So we want to be able to notice that, hold space for ourselves that we're going to have a much harder time doing the things that we did in winter or summer or fall. During that time of period. So we notice the triggers and we adjust our expectations of ourselves accordingly so that we are sitting on our line of what we can tolerate, not trying to force ourselves into it, which goes to that old rhetoric of like, you just need to get over it. You just need to talk about it. You just need to go back in there, blah, 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 blah. Not always.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, no.
Yeah.
It's not how it works. And if we're doing it because somebody who hasn't been through these things is telling you to do it. Yeah. They don't know what they're talking about.
So to be able to say, no, we're not right now.
Yeah. Boundaries
are huge.
And boundaries are hard.
Yeah.
Especially if you have little T trauma and it wasn't okay to set boundaries. It's a whole other thing.
Whole other piece. Amazing. Anything else that you feel that, especially in this conversation, because I think I'd love to have these conversations more with you too, Janelle, I think talking about these things so that, again, all of the listeners out there, all the women out there can really get a sense of like, hey, you're not alone. This is important. We need to be able to talk about these experiences and have this shared language around it.
Yeah.
Anything else that you want to?
Oh, there's like 26 different vortexes going on in my brain right now of different topics.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. So what we're going to do is have you write those down and then we'll talk about those next time.
Don't count them. I'm not sure it's actually 26. It might be 54. I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see. So now, how can people get in touch with you? Mm-hmm. Connect with you, find out more information.
Yeah. So you can go to my website. So it's just my first name, Janelle, J-I-N-E-L-L-E, counseling, counselling.com.
Perfect.
I always like to spell it out because counseling is spelled different ways all over the place.
Absolutely.
And the one I use is the Canadian spelling. So.
And we'll definitely link to that in the show notes as well.
So there you have, there's an option at the bottom. If you need to send me an email, it also has a link to the Moss website as well to do any booking where you can book a consultation either over the phone or telehealth. And then for residents of Alberta, I'm able to offer services. Anyone in Alberta, it doesn't have to be in Calgary.
Perfect.
I do in-person and virtual. I do some over the phone. I don't love over the phone. So if it is possible to do virtual, I would prefer that. Mm-hmm. But I'll make it work. I'm pretty adaptable.
Perfect.
And 20-minute consults.
Great.
Yeah, that's kind of the best way to reach me.
Perfect. And those on social media, again, you're available. They can connect on the Moss Postpartum House Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So far, I've stayed away from it. I debate all the time, but I'm not ready.
No worries. Hey, no worries. So now let's switch gears and let's talk about our mama must-haves. Mm. I can go first. My mama must-have today. Now, especially with this conversation that we were having today, it's kind of interesting because I'm a big fan of RuPaul's Drag Race. Same. On Netflix. I've always been a fan of RuPaul over the years. And then I love what they've created with these numerous seasons of shows. I love that it's on Netflix. And not only in terms of seeing the art of drag, but also the conversations that are had around trauma, around community, around shame, around identity, around being your authentic person. And
talk about little T trauma, not being okay to be yourself growing up.
Huge. And so again, RuPaul's Drag Race, my mama must have. And I think even especially the quote that RuPaul always ends each episode with, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else? What's your mama must have for
not
today?
I'm going to counter that.
Oh, perfect.
There's actually Evie Oddly did a little one in the most recent All-Stars season. And what they had to say was beautiful. And so I can't remember it. I just remember being like, yes, get it. So if you can find it, it's wonderful. Maybe we'll find the link and add it too. But
perfect.
Mine would actually be community. And I think it's because we preach self-care so hard, but without community care, self-care and self-love feel impossible. Mm-hmm. I had the honor of attending some training from an organization called Seeing Color here in Calgary. And when they talked about community care, it just like set off a light bulb for me. Like I was like, oh my God, that is what's been missing. That is what is showing up for me. That is what is showing up for all these moms that I'm working with, all these dads I'm working with, all these non-binary parents I'm working with. Like this is what's showing up if we don't have community right now. And it's like, how are you going to love yourself? How are you going to love anyone else? If you can't love yourself, but we need other people to love us also so that we can have space to love ourselves.
Yeah.
That's kind of my must have is community. If you don't have it, you build it.
Yeah. I love that.
I didn't have it here. I built it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Awesome. So now, super mom moment. Do you have a super mom moment to share?
I do have a super mom
I
moment.
I bet you do. You're an amazing mom for your little one.
I do my best, but I also flail often and forget all my training because you can't be a therapist with your own child. And I have a ton of training in child development and I forgot all of it. My daughter was recently transitioning to a new daycare and she loved her old daycare, like loved it. And they were wonderful. But it was such a far drive for me. And so I just wanted her closer to home. Also so that my partner can actually pick her up sometimes. you know, if maybe if I was sick, should I even say that out loud? He could take her.
Knock on wood.
Maybe I was like sick after her, so now she's better. That he could drive her, right? So we needed that. And I found a great daycare that I felt really comfortable with, but it also gives us a lot of anxiety. There's still a lot of fear there, what it's going to be like. And she hated it.
Oh no.
Hated it. I went from having this little kid who I would take her to daycare and I have to be like, can I have a hug? And she'd come back and give me a hug and then go off. Like she was just like, no, I love daycare. Bye.
Yeah.
This is my jam.
See you later.
Yeah. This place is fun. To clinging to me. Like, no, mommy, no go. Like clinging. She's 2.5, by the way. And it was heartbreaking. I was a mess. It was devastating. I'm so impacted by how she was feeling and how hard she was doing, and debating in my brain of like, is the daycare bad or is this normal? Like, what did I do wrong? Like, I love the head lady. She would text back and forth with me and like send me updates, and oh, she was wonderful. And then finally, so my daughter was stalling with everything. Getting ready in the morning was so painful. Everything, breakfast turned into art projects. It took 20 minutes to go upstairs, 20 minutes to brush our teeth, 20 minutes to pick out shorts and then change to different shorts and then cry about, like, it was a nightmare. It was horrible. And I was breaking. And so one night we were trying to get ready for bed and she was stalling and she was setting up all her stuffed animals. And she was like, circle time, friends, circle time. My friends have circle time. And I was like, okay, she's playing with her stuffies, but it's bedtime. Like, we have to start going. She's already stalled like 45 minutes. Like, we've got to get moving. So I gave her all the warnings and I was like, honey, like, I'm going to have to take the stuffed animals away. You can keep them, but you need to do the things to do to bed. If you can't do that, the mommy has to take them away. Eventually I had to take them away. She full on melted down, puddle of tears, kicking and screaming on the floor, full meltdown. And something just clicked. And I was like, she just misses her friends. And so I asked her, I was like, are you missing your friends at old daycare? Yeah. I said, oh, are you using your stuffies like they were your old friends? Yeah. Oh, do you feel sad that you're not at old daycare anymore? Yeah. I said, it's okay to feel sad. Mommy and daddy are here. And I just sat on the floor with her. And I just said, when you're ready, you can come give us a hug if you want one. But it's okay to feel sad and it's okay to feel your feelings. She cried for another few minutes and then she got up and she gave daddy a hug. And things turned around after that. She started telling me in the car, like, I don't like new daycare. I miss my old daycare. And then we could talk about it. Now she loves daycare. She still calls it new daycare, which is kind of funny. Like, now she's like, new daycare, good.
Oh, that's
almond nice. You know, like, now she loves it. She looks forward to it. She doesn't stall, but it just took that moment to connect what was happening. And I was just, it was a very proud mommy moment. Even though I didn't even get the hug.
But just that time to make the space to have that conversation.
Yeah. And I'm still proud that she had the choice that it didn't have to be me.
Yeah.
But she got to decide, who do you want the hug from?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I love that.
What's your supermom moment?
A little less intense, maybe. But this weekend, truthfully, it was just a matter of like getting to Saturday afternoon. Both myself and Frankie's daddy were working, so I had to arrange babysitter. That all worked out. And then it was like, I don't even know what we're going to do with the rest of the day. We hung out for a bit and then it was just, okay, it was beautiful outside. Let's just go to a water park. So we just got up, spontaneous trip, water park, super fun. And I remembered everything we needed. I remembered the swimsuit, towels, snack, water, all of the things. So it all worked out. So
I don't know if I've ever accomplished that. So that is equally as important.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So it was really lovely. And just the fact that I didn't have to do this like super amount of planning or anything. And I just, it worked for us to just like go. It was lovely. And another extra bonus is we ran into another colleague from Moss Postpartum House and her kids were there as well. So it was just, nice. It was so lovely. So yeah.
Yeah. Talk about community.
Talk about community, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, mama mess up. Mm-hmm. Lately, and again, a little bit, even what you were talking about with your little one kind of stalling, it's been a struggle to get Frankie to eat breakfast in the morning. And this is where it's just like, I even am not finding, like, she's a little bit more picky. So it's just like, oh, it's been a real struggle to just find something that she's just going to eat quickly. That's going to fill her up, and get going, and probably a piece of too much screen time in there too. But anyway, so that's a mama mess up that we're just even dealing with right now. That's not wrapped up in a nice, pretty little bow that I have a solution to already. Yeah. It's just, that's what's there right now for us.
Motherhood.
It's motherhood, right? In all of its messy imperfection. Yeah. So yeah.
And ours is always sleep.
Oh. Always
sleep. It was sleep when she was a baby. Mm. It was, you know, we've gone through spurts where it's okay. So please, parents that are listening, when I say I have a 2.5-year-old struggling with sleep, it was not constant. We've had windows of proper sleep.
Thank goodness.
But like, we ended up having to hire a sleep consultant when she was one, after she broke us a couple times. And then now, I don't know if she's going through a regression. I don't know what's happening, but like, sleep is a never ending struggle. Mm-hmm. I have been getting woken up every single night for the last 2 weeks, and she comes and she gets me and I take her back to her bed and we sleep, but I'm constantly in my brain of like, what am I supposed to do or not do? And I have no answers for this. We're just waiting to see, does something shift? Is this a developmental milestone, or do we need to reach out to the sleep consultant again? Because and then there's that debate of like, do you stay and cuddle them? They need the cuddling. Like, they clearly need some nurturing, but then also like, I need sleep. And like, toddlers are terrible sleeping buddies.
They are not great sleeping partners, for sure.
They don't just roll over. Maybe some people do, but they're not the ones that are calling you into their bed to sleep.
No, no.
Maybe they roll onto their side and just let you sleep. But like, no, I sleep on a half a foot section on the edge of a bed.
Aww.
Even though she has a queen. We have to share pillows. And if I go to the other pillow, she melts down and comes to my pillow.
Of course, right. You're in it.
Oh, I'm in it.
And it won't be like that forever.
It won't be like this forever.
Yeah.
We've had windows where it's not.
There you go.
We'll get there.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a great mom.
I hope so.
Yeah. So why don't, I'm going to share now a few things that me, myself and Dr. Lisa are up to. I have my next hypnobirthing session happening in the fall to really help expecting parents decrease fear and anxiety and support their natural instincts around labor and birth. So you can check out the next date at hypnobirthingcalgary.com/register and Dr. Lisa's new meetup group, Wild Woman Adventures Toronto, is having different events this summer and fall. If you're wanting to connect with other women, get out in nature, push yourself out of your comfort zone, check that out. Also, her Fall Wild Collective is going to be happening. You can get on the wait list at wildcollectivetoronto.com. Thanks everyone for joining us. Thanks Janelle for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Listening to me ramble.
Absolutely. It was wonderful. Thank you so much for all of these, again, just this amazing conversation to have and for us to really have more awareness around trauma and how it can impact us and our families. You can find our show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com. You can leave us a review. We'd love for you to subscribe and also leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. You can also support us by visiting our Patreon page. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. So stay safe and healthy, everyone. Take care. So, Janelle, how can people connect with you, find out more information, get in touch?
Yeah. So for anyone living in Alberta, you can connect with me through my website. So it's just my first name, J-I-N-E-L-L-E, counseling, C-O-U-N-S-E-L-L-I-N-G @.com.
Perfect.
Don't put the at in there.
And we'll also put a link to that in the show notes so that, again, you can just go to the show notes, click on the little link to go to your website. That's perfect.
Or you can find me through the Moss Postpartum website or through the Moss Postpartum Instagram. I don't have my own social media account. I just have not gotten into that yet.
No worries.
Maybe I never will. We'll find out.
We'll see. And then with your website, so you do offer services to people in Alberta. Mm-hmm. You also have a kind of a free consultation meet and greet so that people can kind of get in touch with you, see if you're the right fit.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do Perfect. A 20-minute free consultation. So it's either over the phone or over video.
Great.
So you can decide what fits your lifestyle better. And then you can meet me and decide, do I feel like a good fit for you? And if not, that's totally okay. I always tell people to let me know what wasn't a fit. And I'm happy to try and help you find someone who is.
That's amazing.
At the end of the day, people just deserve to get the support they deserve.
So key. Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you. So now let's switch gears. And let's talk about our mama must-haves. Do you have a mama must-have to share for this week?
Yeah. So it's funny because I often talk about how hard social media can be on moms, but there are accounts that I find really helpful. And the one that I've really liked is called Kids Eat in Color. And it's this woman, she lives in the States. I don't have her bio on me right now. But I find she takes a really beautiful approach to nutrition and talking about it in a way where she also acknowledges privilege and she acknowledges areas where you don't have access to mm-hmm. fresh fruits and vegetables and, or you can't afford the fresh fruits or vegetables, and gives you actual information about nutritional value of those different things. And so I think she does a beautiful job there. And I think it's been really, really helpful in parenting for my own little one of undoing some of those like 90s messages of like, just eat what's on your plate. No dessert until you finish.
For sure.
Like one of my favorite tricks she does is like, she just puts dessert with dinner and it works like a charm.
Amazing, right?
My kid doesn't even finish the dessert.
Love it.
But if I give her just dessert, she's going to finish all of it.
I love it.
Like, it's so good. I just like how she does it. It's so non-shaming.
Fantastic. Yeah, I love that. We'll definitely link to that in the show notes. My mama must have for this week. I mean, especially with the pandemic, especially like life happens, there's going to be losses. The losses even that I've experienced over the past couple of years, that I've definitely talked about before and did a episode on grief and even just recent losses in my family as well. What really I find helpful in terms of that process is, again, these kind of conversations and listening to these kind of conversations. There's a couple of podcasts that I like to listen to. There's a really new one, Healing with David Kessler. He's a really great expert in grief. And then I also found the podcast Hereafter with Megan Devine. And I just really love the conversations that they have. Just being really down to earth in the fact that, you know, life happens and we're going through stuff and it's not always going to be clean and messy or clean. It's going to be messy. It's often messy. And that it's not like, you know, even these, you're going to get things perfect all the time. It's not like even you've said that, you know, it makes sense to jump into, you know, processing things and fixing things right away. Just knowing that, again, kind of grief comes out of the love that we have for other people around us. So I found that those podcasts have been really helpful.
Nice.
Yeah. So now let's move over to our super mom moments. I'll share mine first. Frankie had asked to go to a swimming pool. And so I was like, okay, hold off. Let's find a day that's going to work. And then finally, this past weekend, we went to the wave pool, but made sure that she cleaned up all of her toys first. So that was, again, fantastic because that had been left a little longer than I like. And so I left us going to the wave pool until later in the afternoon, which was, again, really fantastic timing. I was like, it worked perfectly. And because I was like, okay, she went nonstop at the wave pool. She was just go, 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 go. So it's like perfect. She has a lot of energy to burn. And then on the way home, she started to fall asleep in the car. And I made sure that I was like basically yelling at her, like poking her. I was like, ooh, what's that? So that she would open her eyes. I did, pulled out all the stops so that she wouldn't fall asleep. So that again, we could have some supper, have a bath time, get her to sleep. It was perfect. And she slept through the night too, which was amazing as well. Amazing. So total supermom moment.
Absolutely.
How about you, Janelle?
I think the one I'm going to share today is, one of the things that I do with my daughter is I just like to ask a lot of permission for things that I can. And so I often will ask her, like, do you want to feel your feelings or do you want mommy to sing a song? Right. Or do you want to play something? And she'll tell me if she wants to be distracted or if she wants to feel her feelings. And then I let that happen. Right.
Amazing.
So she gets to decide the level of discomfort she sits in. But one of my favorites and the reason I know this is a super mom moment is my other therapist mom, who I have so much respect for. Her name is Gabby. She started doing it with her own daughter. Where now she'll ask, so what I do is I say, Tessa, do you want mommy to wipe your tears or do you want to feel your tears? And she almost always wants to feel her tears. Oh. And I think it just like, it's really cool to just build that awareness that like when we're wiping people's tears away, we're doing it for us, not for them.
Oh my God. That's so beautiful. I love that, Janelle. Oh my God. Thanks for sharing that. That's super mom for sure. And especially like super mom now.
Yeah.
Right? Letting our kids choose.
Yeah. And feel her. She gets to feel how she gets to feel how she wants to feel in the body.
Oh my God. I love that. Right? I love that.
Like these are those simple little things that we don't think that aren't simple, but they are simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simple, but huge, huge impact.
Yeah.
Oh, love that. Okay. Mama mess ups. I mean, we're amazing moms. And for me, my mama mess up. I mean, the past few months, I've shared, they've been a little challenging. I mean, viruses happen. And there's been a lot of times, especially in the past couple months, where I've just been like too tired, not giving us enough time in the morning. Frankie used to be great at riding her bike to day home, which was amazing. And then I would get to walk beside her. We'd both get that exercise, that time outside. And even with the weather being warmer, it just hasn't been happening. And so that's really been a mess up that I'm just looking forward to shifting. So that watch for a super mom moment in the future around that.
Yeah. Maybe we adapt.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would we do differently?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Something. But anyway.
I don't know what it is either.
Hopefully we'll be ready for it soon. So yeah. Right? How about you, Janelle?
I think where this came up yesterday, actually, where I'm trying to find this balance of like, what are the social norms that are helpful and important for her to understand and to have and to use boundaries around that? And which ones are really stupid? Like which ones are so unnecessary? And I think I find this is a real struggle that's ongoing for me being neurodivergent because my brain goes down 300 different lines of thought. And I'm like, well, what about this? And what about this? And then what about this? And why would it be like this? And so why is that necessary? Why is that a rule? Like I'm asking myself, I'm just as annoying as a toddler in my brain because I ask why about everything. And so I think that's where I'm just like, how much chaos am I going to give this kid? Because I cannot keep these straight, consistent rules. Because like, if I don't understand it, I can't enforce it. Mm-hmm. And like yesterday, I didn't decide. Do I go chase her down to put her shoes on, or do I just let her run around in her socks on the grass? I don't know. She sees me run around without my shoes on all the time. So like, can I really tell her to put her shoes on? You have to put your shoes on before you go to daycare. So there's sometimes you have to, and sometimes you don't. Where are those lines? How do you teach a 2.5-year-old? The ambiguity of that.
Yeah. Great question. Great question. Let us know when you have the answer to that. Okay.
Yeah. She's 25 and comes back and is like, mom, I don't know what to do with anything because everything's ambiguous. I'm like, here's your therapy jar.
Exactly. Right. Oh, perfect. So now let me share a little bit about what myself and Dr. Lisa are up to in the next few months. My next hypnobirthing session for expecting parents to decrease fear and anxiety and to support their natural instincts around labor and birth is going to be happening later this fall. So you can go to hypnobirthingcalgary.com/register for that. And Dr. Lisa's new meetup group, Wild Woman Adventures Toronto, is happening. You can join her if you want to get out in nature, connect with other women, and push yourself out of your comfort zone. Also, her next Wild Collective for fall 2022 is going to be happening soon. So get on the wait list at wildcollectivetoronto.com. Thanks so much for joining us, Janelle. And thanks for everyone out there for joining us. Again, you can find our show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com. We'd love for you to subscribe, leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And you can also support us on our Patreon page. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. Stay safe and healthy, everyone. Take care.